A widow, about to lose her sons to a debtor, was desperate for the prophet's help. Her last possession was a jar of olive oil. Elisha told her to collect as many jars as she could. Then, God did more than she could imagine. Get ready to be blessed as we see God's ridiculous provision.
Hey, good morning. Hey, welcome to URA Community Church. My name's Ron. I'm the lead pastor here. It's so good to have all of you with us today, and just thank you for coming to hang out with us. And we just, you know, as Gabe said earlier, we just know there's a lot of places you could be on a Sunday morning, and so we're just honored that you would spend this time with us. And I think you're going to be blessed today. I think that every week, but, you know, just I believe that today because of the reality of this series and the message that we're going to be talking about, the scriptures that we're going to read and the things that we're going to learn, not some fairy tale, not some child's fable, but we're going to read about a true account of how God did something amazing in someone's life, and not just someone special, not someone unique in that regard, but someone that we can all have the same kind of things happen in our lives. And so we want to talk about faith and just being able to look at who God is and believe him for who he is. And so today we're going to be in week 3 of our message series, Elisha, A Tale of Ridiculous Faith. And I'm so excited about the stories I've heard from people just being able to grasp faith and being able to look at some situations that they're in and be able to understand how they can truly depend on God in the midst of tough times. We started out the first week, we burned the plows and killed the cows, right? That was where we started in week 1. And then last week we looked at digging ditches. And so we had to see how the water was going to flow, and we were able to dig ditches. And next week, maybe you're here today, you've lost your edge, your spiritual edge. You've lost how you've been able to just trust God. You've been able to see him, and just spiritually, you just feel like you're just dull. Well, next week, we're going to look at an account and how to get our edge back, and we're going to see how God used an axe head and did something amazing and used Elisha in this whole thing to make this axe head show us something that will allow us to be able to spiritually just get back. Maybe you felt like you were closer to God at one time. Maybe you feel like that the temperature between in your relationship with him, between you and he, is really diminished. Then next week is the week I think is going to change so many lives because of the way that I've been able to just see this account and be able to see how God can truly do that in our lives. So today we're going to do something different. We're going to grab some jars. And so I hope you've come with your hands ready to grab them and be ready to see what he wants to do. I believe this message is going to minister to those of us in the room who feel overwhelmed. Anybody in here maybe fit that description? I think if we're honest, there'd be a lot of hands go up in the room. Some of us are afraid we're so overwhelmed we can't even lift our hands to tell each other that we're overwhelmed. And so the fact is that there's many of us in need right now, and this message is going to be see, it's going to be overwhelming, you know, furball. Anyway, so here we go. We're going to be going through this, and we're going to be digging down into where we can, if we're low on faith, if we've been struggling and overwhelmed, that we can truly grab something out of this. This week I've had some conversations that have really kind of brought me to the place of just realizing how important today's message is. I talked with a married couple who is struggling in their marriage, and just realizing the depth of where they have gotten to and how far apart they feel in their relationship. They both feel like they have fallen out of love. Let me just tell, can I just be really honest? We fall out of windows. We don't fall out of love. You don't fall into love. You fall into ditches, but you don't fall into love. Love is something that God uses to draw us together. And so today, if you feel like you've fallen out of love, let me just tell you that you've just allowed life to get in there and block all the things that God wants to do in your life. This message today is going to be talking about what we have instead of what we think we need. It's about what we really have. And so today is not about looking at how you've fallen out of love. It's just about looking at what God wants to do in the relationship that he's brought you together in. I talked with another lady this week who just felt like she was at the end of her rope, who felt like all the things of life, all the things going on in the world have just gotten her to a point where she just felt like God wasn't even there. How could God be in the middle of everything else going on if all of this stuff is happening? How if it, all these things, the things in the world, the things in their family, the things, you know, just issues and health problems and all kinds of things, how in the world could God truly be there? Where is he when all these things are going bad? You ever been there before? I know I've had that feeling. And so we got to think about, what is faith like? What does it look like to be able to trust God when everything else is falling apart? Because listen, when things get bad, guess who doesn't change one bit? God. We may change, we may look at things a whole lot different, but God never changes. And he's always there. And he's made that promise very clear to us, so we need to hold on to it. Talked to a father this week who, one I really kind of identified with, you know, maybe some of you men will get this one. He was struggling with how to provide for his family, that there was a financial stress on his family, and they were there struggling with how in the world, how's he going to provide? How's he going to give his family everything that they want when he can barely provide what they need? And how is he going to do it? And some of us in here know what that's like, to be able to stress under this financial pressure, to feel the pain of that. But see, all of these people that I'm talking about, the pain was real. It may be different, and it may be a different kind of pain, but it's still real. And we've all probably felt something like it, to be able to question, do we really believe God is who he says he is? And so today I want us to dig down into the scripture, and I want us to be able to see that we can trust God, that we can have faith in him to be all that he has promised to be. So let's dig in. We're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 4. If you have your bulletin or your program there, you can open it up. It's in there. It'll be on the screen. If you have your phone app, YouVersion, pull it right up. You're going to be able to follow along with us. But let's read through 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. It says, "The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, 'Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that he revered the Lord, but now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves.' Elisha replied to her, 'How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?' 'Your servant has nothing there at all,' she said, 'except a small jar of olive oil.'" Well, let's talk about this, because there's a lot here in the context of these two scriptures that really set the stage for what we're going to talk about today. We don't know who this widow was. We don't know her name. We don't know a whole lot about her. The Jewish tradition is that she is the wife of the prophet Obadiah. Now, if you've ever heard me talk about Obadiah, like, he's like my favorite prophet. I don't really know a whole lot about him. I just like his name. There's just something about the name Obadiah that just kind of cracks me up. I always say that if I had a big dog, I would name him Obadiah, because it's like, it's just one of those weird names, and I couldn't tell you why, and all y'all looking at me like I'm crazy, like, why are you even telling me that? I don't know, but it's just cool. Obadiah. He'd be a big dog, and he'd probably growl and bark really loud. But anyway, I just like that name. But we believe that this is the wife of Obadiah. Now, Obadiah would have been broke, and this widow would be broke, because he had care of a lot of prophets. It's believed over 50 prophets that he would have cared for financially and provided for. And so they found themselves, as he dies, he didn't have much to begin with, and now that he's gone, there is nothing. And she's left holding, you know, her sons and nothing else. It was one of those things where the prophets would have always cared for other prophets, and they would have always been on the move, so there just wasn't much there. Here's this widow now, lost her husband. She has no chance of meaningful employment. If you know much about the culture, you know, really, she was unemployable. That's kind of how it was in that time, unless, you know, she wanted to go work in the oldest profession possible, right? If you don't know what that is, ask your mom and dad. They'll tell you. Anyway, set you up to explain that one, didn't I? Anyway, so that was her only option. And obviously, she didn't want to do that. We don't want to see her do that. That's great. But here's the reality, that she had no chance of anything happening. She's devastated. She's lost her husband. She's lost everything that she knows. The creditor is coming to take her sons. In this culture, if you didn't pay your bills, the creditor could come and take your children, and they could be held as slaves until the debt was paid or until the year of Jubilee, and that's a whole other message, but they could hold them for a while. I mean, can you imagine that? Come here, boys. Repo man's here. You know, time to come get you. See you in a couple years or whatever. It's crazy. But that's where this lady is. She's facing some very difficult circumstances. Humanly speaking, she was at the end of a rope. She had no hope. She had nothing to provide for her. She lost her husband, can't pay her bills, she's going to lose her kids. Man, that's some tough stuff, isn't it? You know, I think about the things in my life that I get all riled up about. I think about the things that I get upset about and let just tear me off my frame sometimes. And they're not really very big things, are they? They're things like Google Maps. When they take me to the wrong place every time. That gets me all tore up, you know? Man, when I keep scrolling my finger across the front of my iPad, and it won't go, and I can't do the things I want to do because I got these big, fat, short, stubby fingers. Or, I don't know, they're too big or something. That it just doesn't work. It makes me angry because it just doesn't respond when I want it to. I think about the things that get me all riled up, you know, when, you know, there's traffic, that they're repairing the roads to make them smoother and better for me up ahead. But that one day, I can't wait 5 minutes to let them just get it done and let me go by. I mean, there's stuff that happens in our lives that we just get all tore up about that just really isn't a big deal. You go to the restaurant. You ask for the ranch on the side, but they put it on your salad. I mean, come on. And what do? You don't leave her a tip because somebody messed up in the kitchen, right? So we get riled up about it. We get devastated at the most silly things. When our selfies don't get a whole lot of likes on Facebook, you know? And nobody puts the hashtag beautiful in their comments. You know, you try to pose, and you got all this stuff going on. I hadn't figured out the whole pose from above, but anyway, I'm not sure what you're trying to prove there. But anyway, you know, it just doesn't work. No matter what you do, you just don't get it. But don't we spend our lives just getting messed up by the most simple things? Here's a lady that's lost everything. She's lost all that she has and knows. She's lost all the stuff that can provide for her and her kids. And we get upset about silly stuff. She had some reasons to get upset, and she was. She came to the prophet, and she said, "Listen, I need help." I love the way that he responded. I love the way that he looked at her. Elisha gives her some really good things, but stop and think for a second. Some of you in here don't have those silly little problems. You have some graduate-level problems like she does. Marriage is falling apart. Financially, you just don't know what you're going to do. How are you going to pay your next bill? Some of us are here and we don't know how we're going to respond. Some of us, maybe we just got a terrible diagnosis at the doctor's office, us or somebody we love, and we're like, what in the world is going to happen next? I don't know. Listen, those are graduate-level problems. Those are big things. And you can identify with where she is. Maybe today you're in some significant need. I want you to know that Elisha has something for us to show us. God is using Elisha to show us something good. So let me give you the key statement for today before we dig in. Here's what it says. When you don't have what you really want, you will discover that God is what you really need. When you don't have what you really want, can you identify with that? I don't have all the things I really want. But when we realize that, when we get down to that we don't have what we really want, then we can discover that God is really all that we need. We need to be able to see him for that. Let's unpack this story. The woman here, she's in significant need. She expresses her need to the prophet, and what does he do? Eat it for you. Does he say that? No. Does he blow her off and just, you know, kind of pat on the back and walk on? Does he do what a lot of people say to us when we're in that? Well, I just want you to know I'm thinking of you. Thinking of me. You're in my thoughts. I'm in your thoughts. What is that? You know, have you ever thought about what that really means for somebody just to be thinking of you? Well, you could be thinking bad stuff of me. You could be thinking good stuff. You could be thinking about where I live. You could be thinking about what I drive. You could be thinking about what all kinds of stuff, what I wear and everything else. I don't want you to think about me. I want you to pray for me. I want to know that you're serious about taking my need for what it is. And so that's, we need to be focused on being able to pray for each other in these things, because Elisha doesn't just blow her off. He doesn't just say, you know, sorry about that and move on. No, he's serious about it. In verse 4 or in verse 2, he says this with, he says, "How can I help you?" That's a powerful statement, isn't it? Think about if you're sharing your biggest burden with somebody and they say to you, "How can I help you?" Doesn't that mean something? Doesn't that go to a whole nother level? If it's somebody that you care about and that cares about you, you know they're serious. They want to help you. Isn't that a place that we should be able to go with the people that come to us and share what's going on? Is that, "How can I help you?" If you want to make a difference in this world, if you want to see God do some amazing stuff in your life, become the "how can I help you" person. Be the person that when people come and they share their heart, that you don't focus on you, because let's be honest. Here's what happens most of the time. I'm guilty of it too. Somebody comes and they share their heart with me, and sometimes we don't even know that we do it, but we're so selfish. We're just selfish people. We immediately begin to tell them about our problem. We don't focus on them. We focus on us even in the midst of that. But what if we were to say, "How can I help you?" to everybody that came to us and mean it. To say, "God, you know what? Today I want to be the 'how can I help you' person. God, I want to be the person that you use to be a conduit of your love to the person that you send in my life that's in need. How can I help the people around me? God, even when I can't provide it myself, even when I can't be the one that meets the need, how can I be the one who finds the solution to the issue?" What if we were, seriously, just think about this. What if just this group in this room right now decided that this week, when people came to us and shared with us, that we would not get focused, we'd not get mad, we'd not tell them our own story, but we would truly say to them, "How can I help you?" and mean it. And be willing to do whatever it takes to help them where they are. Think about this past week. All right, so let's this week anything could come. What about this past week, though? We know what happened this week, right? We know who came to us. We know who crossed paths with us. God, I can't talk today. We know about that. What if we would have been the "how can I help you" person this past week? What kind of difference could we have made in the world, in our community, if that's the person we'd have been? Now, you have to think about that for yourself. Now, some of you are that kind of person. I know many of you are just that. "I'll help." You know, this past week we were able to help a lady with her power bill because some people just said, I can help. And we were able to pay that for her and help her out, and that was amazing. And so there's a way that we have to look at this. That when somebody says, "I've got a problem, I've got migraine headaches, my kid's going nuts, you know, my husband, I just don't know what to do with him." What if in those situations we just said, "How can I help you?" What difference would there be? Then the prophet goes on, though. He doesn't just stop there. He says, "Tell me what you have in your house." Now, what he's doing is he's being kind to her, because he kind of knows where she's at. He knows she doesn't have a lot. So instead of pointing out what she doesn't have, he's trying to help her find out what she does have. He's trying to keep her dignity about her by not, you know, putting her down and making her feel bad because she didn't have something. He says, no, what? Tell me what you have in your house. And what does she say back? Your servant has nothing there at all. How many times have you and I been in a situation when things are tough and they're difficult and they're, well, we just don't know what to do next, and we begin to look at not what we could have, we look at what we don't have. How often are we focused on what's missing rather than what's there? We say, I don't have enough money, so I can never be happy. I don't have a spouse, so I can't really have a meaningful life. I've had people say, you know, I can't host a life group because my house isn't nice enough. I can't host a life group because my house isn't big enough. Because, you know, we all know that you got to have a mansion to have a life group in, right? That's not true. You just got to have a room where you can take some folding chairs and put them out, and you know what? The closer the better sometimes. You can do like I do, and you can do it in the backyard, okay? It doesn't matter. We had a great group this past Friday night, just circled around a fire pit, just hanging out, a great devotion, and everything else was great. Our next-door neighbors, we got to know them. They came over and hung out with us. It's cool. Like, listen, life group's not about what you have or the setting around you. It's about the people that you have and the God that's in the middle of it. That's what life group should be. It's not about all those things. We don't have to focus on what we don't have. We can focus on what we have. Now, some of you may have known ladies like this. I've never known one. I've never been around one. But, you know, there's ladies who have closets full of clothes, right? Bags full of clothes and just tons of clothes around their house, you know? And they walk into this room with all these clothes and all this stuff, and they look around and they say, I don't have anything to wear, right? Yeah, I don't know one like that. I don't know any, you know? Don't know them. Just saying, I don't know them, okay? I don't know what that's like. I've heard. But they saw, you know, all these clothes, I don't have anything to wear. Man, you could clothe a whole African village with all of this, you know? But we walk in and focus on what we don't have versus what we have. I know that I'm going to die after this, probably. I feel the heat. So last week, you know, if you missed last week, you know, listen, I'm telling you, when you miss a day, you miss some pretty good stuff. I tried to help Pastor Gabe dig himself out of a ditch, you know, and in his love life, and you know, he's just struggling. You know, poor Pastor Gabe, and I love him, and so I was just trying to help him out a little bit. You know, I know some of you did, you know, getting on to me about it, but I'm just trying to help him. You know, and you know, it's interesting. I don't know if it was good or bad, but you know, I haven't seen or heard from Gabe all week. So I'm thinking he's really busy with all of those, you know, women that y'all maybe seen his way or whatever. I don't know. Or he's just really mad at me. I don't know. But you know, we gotta be willing to look at what we have rather than what we don't have. And so it's funny though, when we're in need, we get so focused on what we don't have. Why is that? It's so much easier. We get pointed in there, and we begin to do that. So what I want to do is ask, what do you do when you don't have much? Because that's where we spend a lot of our time, is what, I don't have much. I don't have a whole lot. The widow here was saying she didn't have anything at home. It's a bad place, and it's a very quiet place. And so what I want us to do is to think about a couple of things, a couple of principles that help us in what do we do when we don't have much. If you're taking notes, write this down. Stop waiting for what you want and start working with what you have. Stop waiting for what you want and start working with what you have. Now, we all tend to look for those things. We get focused on what we don't have, and we try to do it. Here's what happened in this case in 2 Kings 4, verse 2. It says, what do you have in your house? Your servant has nothing there at all except a small jar of olive oil. Now, first he was saying, I don't have anything at all, right? You know how that goes? I don't have anything at all, but I do have a little bit of oil. Stop waiting for what you want and start working with what you have. Think about it. Quit focusing on what you don't have and start working with what you do have. She had a small jar of olive oil. Now, olive oil was a very valuable thing. It could be used for so many things. It could be used for cooking. It could be used to help their lamps burn. It was a good thing. It was used as moisturizer. You know, they didn't have Bath and Body Works with all the lotions and all that stuff. So they, you know, they used olive oil for their skin to make it nice and smooth and get rid of the ashy. They used it to keep their leather pliable. They used it to keep iron from rusting. They used it as an offering to God. I mean, this was a valuable thing for them to have. They used it to anoint people, to try, you know, in healing and in religious services. It was valuable. But she just had a little bit. See, she had a little bit in her house. And so she said, I just got a little bit. She began to think about how much does she have? How much did she have? Just thinking about it. She had a little bit. So we've got to think about what we have. Not what we want, not what we wish we had, but we got to think about what do we have. A little bit of oil. In the New Testament, Jesus was teaching the thousands of people. And it got late and time was over and everybody was hungry. And somebody, one of the disciples was like, hey man, what are we going to do about all these people? You know, they were thinking, all right, let's just send them off. Make them go find their own. And Jesus was like, no, we're going to take care of them. He's like, well, how are we going to do that? What do we have? Like, we don't have anything. They were focused on what they didn't have. But some little boy there said, well, you know, I got a couple fish and five loaves of bread. It's not much, but I got a little bit. And what happened? Jesus blessed it and began to break it. And they began to pass it out to everybody. And before long, they had to go collect all that was left over after they'd fed thousands of people. Now think about that. They had a little bit. But with a little bit, God did something amazing and made it a lot. They were focused on what they didn't have. And God said, what do you have? And let's take it and do something amazing. Jesus said, you need a little bit of faith. In the Old Testament, think about David and Goliath. Here's the whole army is afraid of the Philistines because of this one dude. He just happened to be bigger than the rest of them. And what does God do? He didn't focus on what they didn't have, that they didn't have another 9-foot-tall dude on their side. No, he sent this little shepherd boy out there who had some faith. And he sent this guy who had some faith and a rock out there. Everybody else had said, man, he's too big to beat. And David said, man, he's too big to miss. And he reared back and he let that thing fly and nailed him in the head and he's dead as a doornail. I mean, an amazing thing. God took something little, what they had, and did something amazing with it. Why in the world are we always focused on what we don't have rather than being focused on what we do have and letting God be God in our lives and do something amazing that not only shows us who he is, but shows the world around us who he is. Can you imagine what God could do through us if we just focus on what we have and not what we don't have? It's easy to get off track with that, but he says, stay focused. Think about us as a church. It used to drive me nuts. I've told you this before, but it used to drive me nuts that we can only have these two little signs out there pointing people to where you are a community church is. You know, they're little bitty tiny signs. There's this crazy sign ordinance in Stanley County and Albemarle that you can only be this. I mean, those signs are exactly to like within a quarter of an inch as big as they can be. I stretched them as far as I could, okay? And that's as big as they can go. You can't have anything bigger than that. I want a billboard because I believe God does some really cool stuff here, and I want to tell people where we are because I think God, people need to be able to see it, know it, and find it. And that's just what I want. And for so long, I would get so mad because of those stupid little signs out there. And guess what? God began to really, he beat on me about it. And finally, he says, quit worrying about what you don't have and focus on what you do have. And I began to pray about those signs out on the road. And then all of a sudden, people would come and I'd say, how'd you find out about us? Oh, I saw the sign. It was about what I had, not what I didn't have. Listen, God doesn't need a billboard to draw people to himself. He can draw anybody to him wherever we are. Are we in the ideal location? No. Do I wish we were out on 2427? Yes. Because people would drive by, see it, and maybe just wander in just to check it out. But you know what? It's not about what I want. Because God's way bigger than wherever we're located. I think we have the biggest billboard we could ever find. It's us. Think about how big the billboard is if we all take invite cards out and we just spread them out in the neighborhood and just tell our friends. If we just went next door, if all of us went next door and invited our next door neighbor to come to church with us and they came, think about it. You can do the math. We'd have to go to multiple services. We'd have to, we'd have to have 10 times as many kids workers and all that good stuff. It'd be great things that we would need to do. But we have what we have. And so let's begin to work with what we have and let God do something amazing through it. The second thought that we have today is this. We're going to offer God what we have and trust him to give us what we need. Offer God what you have and trust him to give you what you need. Take whatever it is. Take whatever talent it is, whatever skill it is, whatever you have, and offer that to him and give it to him. And trust him to be faithful in that, to give you what you need. Here's what 2 Kings 3 through 7 says. Elisha said, go around and ask all your neighbors for empty jars. Don't ask for just a few. Now, here's the thing. Week one, we burned plows and killed cows. Last week, we dug some ditches. This week, we're going for the jars. Go get them. Go get as many as you can find. Go get them. All that there is. No matter what size, how big, how small, just go get all the jars that you can find. Go outside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to one side. She left him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, bring me another one. But he replied, there is not a jar left. Then the oil stopped flowing. She went and told the man of God, and he said, go sell the oil and pay your debts. You and your sons can live on what is left. She was focused on what she didn't have. Elisha says, go focus on what you have and get ready for God to do something amazing in the midst of it. And she did what he said. Now, we've all seen some tricks, and we've seen all kinds of things happen, but this was no magic trick. This was a ridiculous request of God to show himself faithful to someone that might have just a little bit of faith that would be willing to do what they were told to do, to follow his instructions. As long as there was an empty jar, God would fill it. But when there were no more jars, the oil stopped flowing. She went and told Elisha. And he says, listen, that's good news. You've got all you need. Go sell that oil, as valuable as it is. Just go sell it, and you'll have all that you need. It's a ridiculous request. God asked her to empty out all she had, to pour it all out, and to see and to trust him and have faith in him to be who he has shown himself to be, and that's faithfulness personified. It took more faith because people didn't have enough. She didn't think she had anything. Take what you have. Stop waiting for what you want. Offer what you have and let God do something special in the midst of it. Think about where you are. He said, go get those jars. Doesn't matter what size, what color, what's, you know, shape. It doesn't matter. Just go get all the jars you can and let me have what you have and let me do what I know needs to be done. Could have been any kind of jar, but he just wanted her to do it. How does this whole thing apply to us? See, God's given us what we have. And he's asking us to trust him with that. He's asking us to give over to him whatever it is that we have and let him do something amazing with it. He's asking us to give him ourselves. Now, if you got financial problems, listen, give him what you have and trust him with it. I'm not saying write a check to the church for what you have, okay? That's a whole nother type of church. I'm not asking you to write that check to us. I'm telling you to trust him with what you have. Just say, you know what, God, I got $100 in my checking account. It's yours. You do with whatever you want. I'm not holding on to that just because I want to hold on to it. You're free to do whatever you want with it. Give him whatever it is that you have and let him work. If it's your relationship with your spouse, say, God, I'm giving them to you. I don't know what the issue is. I don't know how to fix it, but I give you my spouse, and I'm going to let you do whatever it is that you need to do in their lives. I'm going to let you do whatever in my life that you need to do, but I'm giving it away, not holding on to it, trying to fix it myself. God, I don't know how I'm going to pass this class. I don't know how in the world I'm gonna be able to make it through. Look, give him the class. Do your work, do all the study you can, but do it all for him and trust him to let him be the one that gets you through it. Don't try to do it yourself. Give it away. Give it to him. Begin to pour that oil out and let him do what it is that he does best. For you and I, we need to think about giving ourselves away. Listen to what 2 Corinthians 4, verse 7 says. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. Listen, we need to think of ourselves as a jar of clay. We need to think about the fact that God has given us what we have. He's given us, those of us that have come to a place of recognizing who we are, that we're a sinner, lost without God in our lives, that we've come to a place and realized that on my own, there's nothing that I can do to fix the broken relationship with me and God, that the only thing that can fix it is what Christ has already done by dying on the cross, being buried and raised again on the third day. There's nothing else that I can do except to trust him in that, to restore that relationship. And so for me, that the treasure that we have is the ability to have salvation. That this incredible treasure is us. And in this jar of clay, this weak, fragile jar of clay that he has molded and shaped, contains the most incredible power in the world. And that's the power to save. And that's Jesus. And so for you and I, we need to be focused. If we have him, we need to be focused that we have the power that Elisha realized and saw, that we have it inside of us. And we need to be ready to be poured out and to be stretched and to be made all that he wants us to be. To no longer be afraid to be the person that tells people about Christ. We don't have to stand on a street corner and beat our Bibles. Listen, we just got to live it out and let people see it in us. To be willing to be whoever he wants us to be, to trust him to be our God. Because you know what happens when we begin to trust him with what we have? He begins to do amazing things. See, it doesn't just stop with what we have. Because then it begins to be more. And if you just keep pouring, he begins to do some amazing things. He begins to take what we have, and he begins to multiply it. So as long as we have jars, as long as we have things there, as long as we're willing to be used,
He'll keep providing. As long as we have cups, He just keeps adding to it and filling it up so that we have more and we have more, and we just trust Him to do whatever it is that we have. Are you willing to be filled up and poured out? Are you ready to take what you have and let God multiply it? Are you ready to let God fill you up to overflow into the world? Listen, don't let life get you down. Don't let life tell you that you've fallen out of love. Don't let God tell you that you can't provide. Don't let God tell you, don't let God tell you. God can tell you that. Don't let the world tell you that you can't provide. Don't let the world tell you that you can't be all that God wants you to be. Trust Him with what you have and let Him keep pouring you out. Let's pray. God, thank You this morning for Your word. God, thank You that You can take a weak jar of clay, a weak vessel like me, and you can do something amazing in the world. The amazing isn't because of who I am, God, it's because of who You are. God, the amazing thing that I get to do is to proclaim Your gospel weekly and daily. God, the amazing thing is that lives are changed because of who the gospel is, of who You are. And I just get to be the vessel that You use to pour it out. God, today in this room are many vessels, many jars of clay, many people that You've given, in reality, You've given very much to. And so, God, today we ask that we would not be focused on what we don't have, but today we can be focused on what we do have. For those in the room that have accepted Your Son Jesus as their Savior, they have the power living inside of them of salvation, of resurrection. God, for those that are here and have been struggling but never come to begin a relationship with You, to never acknowledge that Jesus died on the cross for their sins, was buried and raised again. God, for those in the room who have been struggling and lost because they've never let You restore that relationship with God for them, then God, in this moment, may they accept You. May they be changed by You. God, in this moment, may we be focused on what we have. God, You've gifted so many of us in this room in so many ways. God, all of us have abilities and skills that You've given us. God, You want us to do so much more through us. So God, in these moments, I pray that You'll open up our hearts and our minds to what it is that You want to do. God, open our hearts up to who You are. God, that You're the God who never will forsake us. You'll never leave us. You'll never let us be abandoned in the midst of the tragedies and the suffering of this world. But God, no matter what we go through, that we can always depend on You to be there. God, the amazing thing is we don't have to wait until times are tough. We can enjoy and celebrate that right in the midst of the greatest things that happen to us. So God, today, may we all be reminded of where we are with You. The harsh, stark reality of maybe we don't have a relationship with You. The harsh, stark reality of we've begun a relationship with You, but we've turned our backs on You and we've walked away and done this and tried to do this on our own. God, but may we come to the rejoicing of knowing that You're right there. Even though we've walked away, You're there, and we can call on You and restore that relationship by just confessing where we've been and what we've done. God, I pray right in these moments that we would see lives change. That God, that there would be all of us driven, just pulled back even closer to You. God, as the band plays, may we be free in this room to move, whether it's to come kneel at the altar and just pray. May it be that we just need to come and talk to a pastor. May it be that we just need to just pray where we are, but to acknowledge who You are and to ask You to fill us up so that we can be poured out. God, we pray all of this in the name of your Son, Jesus.